We welcome you again to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel, a program that looks at the history of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, people, places, events, and important issues associated with church history. I'm Brent Topp, your host, chairman of the Department of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University. And with me today is our guest, Brother Larry Morris, the senior editor of the Joseph Smith Papers Project in the Church History Department here in Salt Lake City. Larry, welcome, and we're glad to have you with us today.
Thanks. It's really good to be here.
Larry is one of our scholars that has written and researched a great deal on Oliver Cowdery particularly, but the Witnesses of the Book of Mormon in particular. And in the episodes that we talk about today, we want to talk about the Witnesses to the Book of Mormon. And so, Larry, why don't we start by talking about how did Joseph Smith get the idea of witnesses, and what do we know about the process by which witnesses came about?
You know, certainly Joseph Smith frequently draws on the Bible, and the Bible emphasizes the need for two or three witnesses to testify of various things. So I don't think Joseph Smith mentioned that explicitly, but I believe that would certainly be a source of inspiration for the idea of having witnesses. And then, you know, early in 1829, when some of the early sections of the DNC were being received, like Section 5, for example, Joseph Smith was inspired to mention witnesses who would testify of the Book of Mormon.
So how did he select them, or how did he go about deciding that there were to be witnesses? As you mentioned, that in Bible, the Lord says, out of the mouth of two or three witnesses shall be the truth be established. The Book of Mormon, as they're translating the Book of Mormon, they come across something about witnesses. Then the revelation, as you mentioned in Section 5, so it comes into his mind that we've got to have witnesses, but how does he... I don't think he put up on a job board a call for applications,
right,
for it. So how does he come to know the witnesses?
Well, you know, Martin Harris was one of the first people outside the Smith family to help Joseph Smith. And in 1827, when Joseph received the plates and he started being harassed by the neighbors, Martin Harris was the one who stepped in and helped Joseph and gave him $50 so he and Emma could make the move down to Harmony and kind of start the translation in a more peaceful setting.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a friend of the family at least by 1827, probably earlier. And he prayed about Joseph Smith and basically became converted in 1827, that Joseph Smith really was an authentic prophet.
And he certainly had a financial investment in it that caused even some difficulties or challenges even within his own home.
Oh, you bet.
And so he's invested blood, sweat, tears, and dollars
in this
process.
And $50, that to us, it sounds like kind of a nice gesture, but it was probably more like $400 or $500
mm-hmm.
in our spending power, you know. And he did stick with Joseph, even though his wife became quite hostile.
Hmm.
And even after Martin Harris lost the 116 pages and he was reprimanded by the Lord, he still stayed loyal and kind of kept on testifying of the Book of Mormon.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about Oliver Cowdery in previous episodes, and Oliver was involved in the translation process and was with Joseph. So I think it makes a lot of sense that Oliver, as kind of a second elder, as he will become to be called, and with Joseph in Susquehanna with the great miracles that took place there, it would make sense that he would be a witness. But
yes.
How does David Whitmer get involved in the process? What do we know about him and the Whitmer family?
Well, the Whitmers were very respected citizens who lived down in Fayette Township, south of Waterloo. you know, it's about 30 miles from Palmyra. And in the fall of 1828, about the same time that Oliver Cowdery started teaching school in the Manchester district, he met David Whitmer in Palmyra. David Whitmer was there on some kind of business, and the two of them struck up a friendship, and they had a mutual interest in this story of the gold plates. And both of them started investigating and talking to neighbors, and both of them got quite interested in the story of Joseph Smith, even though they hadn't met Joseph Smith at that time. And they kind of communicated back and forth through letters, reporting on what they had learned. And when Oliver Cowdery became closely acquainted with the Smith family, he let David Whitmer know that. And so David Whitmer had been an interested party. And when Samuel Smith and Oliver Cowdery left Manchester and went down to Harmony, Pennsylvania, in the spring of 1829, they stopped at the Whitmer home in Fayette and kind of gave a report. And Oliver told David that he would let him know how things were going. And so as the translation was proceeding down in Pennsylvania, Oliver Cowdery wrote a couple of letters to David Whitmer telling him what was happening. And David Whitmer kind of expressed his support. And eventually, Joseph and Oliver left Pennsylvania and went up to the Whitmer home to finish the translation in June of 1829. So David Whitmer had been very supportive.
Interesting. You're listening to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel. I'm Brent Topp, and with me today is our guest, Larry Mora, senior editor of the Joseph Smith Papers Project in the Church History Department. Larry, we talked about Martin Harris and Oliver Cowdery and David Whitmer and their involvement in supporting the prophet Joseph Smith in the translation process, both literally helping out with the translation process and then emotionally and financially supporting. And so we've talked that revelation is what directed the prophet Joseph Smith to select these three witnesses. What do we know about the circumstances surrounding the actual event or events whereby they become eyewitnesses and ear witnesses to this great process?
In June of 1829, Joseph and Oliver were finishing the translation of the Book of Mormon there at the Whitmer home in Fayette Township, New York. And about the same time that the translation was finished, probably in late June, Joseph informed Oliver and David and Martin that they would be privileged to see the plates, and the four of them left the Whitmer home and went out into the nearby woods and kind of prepared themselves and prayed and expected a manifestation, but nothing happened. And Martin Harris said that his state of mind was probably the cause of this, and he withdrew. And at that time,
What do you think he means by that, the state of mind? Or do you think it's linked back to the loss of the 116 pages, or is there something else that's going on at that particular time?
He doesn't say exactly, but he appears to be kind of having doubts.
Okay.
And so he withdrew, and at that time, David Whitmer gave a detailed description of the angel Moroni appearing and presenting not only the Book of Mormon plates, but several other artifacts related to the Book of Mormon, such as the brass plates, the Liahona, and the Urim and Thummim, and the Sword of Laban. Hmm. And so they saw all of these artifacts on a table.
Now, how did that work? Does David Whitmer describe that as a vision? Does the table come down from heaven? Is it actually how does he describe the event?
He certainly describes it as a physical, empirical event, that they were seeing real objects and a real angel, rather than just seeing it in their mind's eye, so to speak. You know, he's very emphatic about it being a physical mm-hmm. experience.
And Martin is not there at this
That's
moment.
That's correct. And they hear the voice of God declaring that the Book of Mormon has been translated by the gift and power of God mm-hmm. and is true. Well, after that experience, Joseph went and found Martin, and then he and Martin had a similar experience. So,
was it just Joseph and Martin, or were the other two with them in the second manifestation, or how did that work?
The second experience was just Joseph and Martin Harris.
Okay.
And the testimony of the three witnesses, of course, has been printed in every copy of the Book of Mormon. You know, 100 million plus copies have been printed. And if you look carefully at the testimony of the three witnesses, you see that their purpose is to testify of the truthfulness of the Book of Mormon. Mm-hmm. And they say, we also know that they, meaning the plates, have been translated by the gift and power of God, for his voice hath declared it unto us, wherefore we know of a surety that the work is true. So they mentioned seeing the plates, but the main part of their testimony deals with the spiritual truth of the Book of Mormon and the testimony of the Savior and of our Father in heaven.
What role did the witnesses have after that? So they go and they write this incredible testimony, and then what role do they have with the establishment of the church, or is basically their job done at that point to be these eye and ear witnesses of the miraculous power of the translation process and the divinity of the Book of Mormon? What happens with them thereafter?
Well, certainly they continued to testify of the Book of Mormon, but they also had prominent roles in the early organization of the church.
Okay.
Oliver Cowdery, of course, was assistant president of the church, and Martin Harris was a very influential missionary. But I believe in 1835 is one of the most significant things that they did was when the three of them selected the first Quorum of the 12 Apostles.
We're talking today on Past Impressions with Larry Morris, senior editor of the Joseph Smith Papers Project in the Church History Department here at Church Headquarters. We're talking about the witnesses of the Book of Mormon and particularly the three witnesses. And Larry, you mentioned there the significance not only of the 1829 event associated with the vision, the visitation of Moroni, the actual tangible witness of the plates, the Liahona, the sword of Laban, the Urim and Thummim, tangible things that the witnesses were able to see and handle. You mentioned about the role in 1835. I find it interesting, as you mentioned, that with regards to the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, in 1835, we have that great revelation establishing the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, the Quorum of the 70 as the and the First Presidency as the presiding quorums of the church. And the three witnesses are fulfilling a role that had happened 6 years earlier. In Doctrine and Covenants, section 18, the Lord reveals to the prophet Joseph Smith in a revelation directed specifically to David Whitmer, but implicitly to Oliver Cowdery and Martin Harris. Martin Harris is involved in the process with section 19 of the Doctrine and Covenants, but I've always found that really fascinating that in that revelation, in identifying the witnesses to the Book of Mormon and talking about their role. And in fact, it's interesting that even David Whitmer in section 18 is referred to as an apostle. And we know that Oliver Cowdery is an apostle in that way, but the word apostle is always linked with witness. And they are given the charge to seek out and find the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. So as you pointed out in 1835, they are the ones that select the Quorum of the 12 Apostles under the inspiration of the Lord. And so what does that mean to us in the church today and the priesthood?
Well, I think it shows you how important the Book of Mormon is, that the three witnesses would be selected to choose and ordain the 12 apostles.
Yeah.
And they did ordain them. And, of course, if you're talking about the line of authority, it would go any of us who hold the Melchizedek priesthood, our line of authority would eventually go back to the three witnesses.
And it's directly linked to those revelations that were given to the Joseph Smith of having witnesses to the Book of Mormon and the whole process of standing as witnesses. I think it's fascinating. I have to admit that I was probably a little older when I realized why the three witnesses were in my line of authority. And we forget that it was very much part of this whole plan and links back to the witnessing of the Book of Mormon.
That's right. And, of course, Oliver Cowdery was with Joseph Smith when Peter and James and John appeared to them and ordained them to the Melchizedek priesthood.
Isn't that fascinating that every major event and major revelation and major restoration is always accompanied by multiple witnesses? I think that is something
that's very
significant that the Lord is telling us. Let's talk a little bit about what happens after 1835, but let's talk about these three witnesses that play such a significant, important role in bearing witness of the Book of Mormon and also as leading figures in the Restoration in those years. What do they do, and how is their witness continued to be broadcast, that's in quotation marks, broadcast throughout the world in their day?
All three of them continued to testify of their experience with the plates, and David Whitmer left a very impressive testimony. He, with several other of the eight witnesses, were in Missouri in the early 1830s, and they were victims of severe persecution. And we have an account of David Whitmer being tarred and feathered with several other church leaders, and the commanding officer of the militia threatened them with instant death unless they denied the Book of Mormon and confessed it to be a fraud. Hmm. And a witness said, David Whitmer hereupon lifted up his hands and bore witness that the Book of Mormon was the Word of God. The mob then let them go.
Huh.
That's just one example of how true David Whitmer was to his testimony.
Wow. Now, how do we reconcile that each of those three witnesses becomes disaffected with the church in some way? Here they've had this incredible experience of seeing Moroni, hearing the voice of God, handling the plates, and seeing the tangible objects associated with the Nephites and the translation of the book. And yet each of them disaffects from the church and the prophet Joseph Smith in some way. How do we reconcile that, and what impact does that have on their witnesses?
Well, that's a very good question. You know, at first I think a person tends to wonder how that could happen and whether or not it makes us question their testimony. But as I've thought about it, I believe they are actually better witnesses of the mm-hmm. Book of Mormon, because during the persecution of 1837 and 1838, both in Kirtland and in Missouri, all three of them became disaffected from the church and cut off from the church. Mm-hmm. So at that point, when they've—
But nothing to do with—it wasn't because of the Book of Mormon or—I mean, it was not that caused them
all
to be offended in
no.
any way. So
it was largely disagreements they had with certain administrative decisions made
right.
by the prophet. And so at that point, when they've been disaffected and they've actually been cut off from the church, they have every motivation to make it known if the Book of Mormon was a fraud.
Today we're talking with Larry Morris, senior editor of the Joseph Smith Papers Project in the Church History Department, and we're talking about the witnesses of the Book of Mormon. Larry, you talked about how the Book of Mormon witnesses, David Whitmer, Oliver Cowdery, and Martin Harris, how each of them at various times became disaffected with the church, but that in some ways that actually gives even greater credibility and reliability to their witnesses. Why don't you expand on that and tell us some of the experiences of those witnesses, even when they were out of the church?
One that's really impressed me is the story of Thomas B. Marsh. He was president of the Quorum of the Twelve, you know. And in 1838 in Missouri, Thomas B. Marsh became disaffected from the church and left the church. And after that, he had an opportunity to meet Oliver and David. And they, by that time, had both been excommunicated. And this is what Thomas B. Marsh said. "I inquired seriously of David if it was true that he had seen the angel according to his testimony as one of the witnesses of the Book of Mormon. He replied, 'As sure as there is a God in heaven, he saw the angel according to his testimony in that book.' I interrogated Oliver Cowdery in the same manner, who answered me similarly."
Hmm.
So even in the midst of this personal conflict they had with Joseph Smith, they were still reaffirming their testimony of the Book of Mormon.
Wow. And you know, I find it fascinating that if this was all a fraud, they would have had the greatest reason whatsoever to turn on Joseph at that point. It would have been so easy to say it was all made up. And yet, not only did they not turn on him, in some respects, I know David Whitmer would become incensed if anybody would ever question his testimony. And there were lots of people that would try to get him to deny it or to back away from it. And David just wouldn't go that way.
Oh, that's right. You know, David Whitmer spent the last decades of his life in Missouri. That's the hotbed of anti-Mormonism. He was a respected member of the community in Richmond, Missouri, and it's really not in his self-interest to keep proclaiming the truthfulness of the Book of Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, he makes himself available to newspaper reporters, and the word kind of gets around about him. And frequently, newspaper reporters come to Richmond and interview him in great detail about the Book of Mormon. And so over and over, he keeps relating the story of the angel in the plates and basically burying his testimony, the truthfulness.
Multiple witnesses of the Book of Mormon. What became of the witnesses? You mentioned that David Whitmer ends up in Missouri or stays in Missouri. What do we know that happens with David Whitmer, Martin Harris? We've talked a little bit about Oliver Cowdery, but particularly Whitmer and Harris.
You bet. Well, as we mentioned previously, Oliver Cowdery was out of the church for about 10 years, and he was rebaptized in the late 1840s, and he died probably of tuberculosis in 1850. He was planning on coming to Utah, but wasn't able to come because of poor health. But right on his deathbed, he was testifying of the truthfulness of the Book of Mormon. David Whitmer lived in Missouri, and he died in 1888. He was in his 80s, and he was the last of the three witnesses, or the eight witnesses, to die. And of course, he was reaffirming his testimony right up to the end. Martin Harris was the one who lived the longest. He died when he was 92, and he stayed in Kirtland for 30 years and gave tours of the Kirtland Temple and was always bearing his testimony of the Book of Mormon. Finally came to Utah in 1873, you know, when he was 90 years old, and he was constantly bearing testimony of his experience with the plates. And there's something very interesting happened with Martin Harris that has a close link with our leaders today. And that is Martin Harris, right before he died, he bore his testimony to a young man named William Pilkington. And William Pilkington, throughout his life, told of his experiences with Martin Harris. And when Elder L. Tom Perry of the current Quorum of the Twelve was a young man, he heard William Pilkington give his account of hearing Martin Harris's
wow.
testimony. So that's how close we are to the three witnesses.
Isn't that interesting? We think of that being so long ago, so far away, and yet it's really just one generation
that's right.
removed in a way that current people in the church heard witnesses of the witnesses bear testimony.
That's right.
Well, Larry, as we bring this to a close, what would you say is the most significant thing that has come to you as you have researched the historical documents and the testimonies and witnesses of the witnesses of the Book of Mormon?
Well, for me personally, studying the lives of Oliver and David and Martin, it becomes apparent that they were honest individuals and that they were clear thinkers, not prone to hallucinations or anything like that. And to me, their witness of the Book of Mormon is a very powerful testimony that really can't be ignored.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I add my second witness to your witness that to me, those witnesses at the front of that Book of Mormon and that declaration is an evidence of the truthfulness of the Book of Mormon that cannot be ignored, and that no matter what attacks are given against the Book of Mormon or against the church, that you can argue with the doctrine, you can argue with all of the different things, but you cannot dismiss those incredible declarations of belief and witnesses. And thank you so much, Larry, for highlighting and sharing with us your knowledge about the three witnesses of the Book of Mormon. I'm Brent Topp, and you've been listening to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel. We look forward to having you join us in future programs. Thank you.